Right, we are rolling.
Okay, mate. Hi, and welcome to Ian Wallace, the Messed Up Counsellor. The process that we're going to explore today is around trust and how trust affects relationships and how trust can be very destructive, obviously, but why it happens, what the trust does and how to work with it, and hopefully give you an idea of, you know, how you can go through a process where trust is an issue in a relationship and come out the other side. It doesn't have to be the end of something when trust is broken. It can be repaired. It's not as easy a process to repair as some things, but it can be repaired and we can come out the other side if we understand what it's all about. So hopefully that'll be interesting. Hi, so trust. Trust has a very slow build usually in a relationship. We don't trust somebody immediately.
Can I just stop you really quickly?
Yeah.
When you went back into it there, you forgot to say basically your normal intro, like, oh, domestic counsellor.
Okay.
So the first clip was fine, from where, but after you clapped, you just went straight back into it.
Right. Cheers, Sam. You have to keep me on track.
No worries. I just thought I'd step in before you got into a flow.
Absolutely. Go for it, mate. Not a problem. Hi. I'm Ian Wallace, the Messed Up Counsellor. And today what I'd like to discuss and explore with you is trust in relationships. Trust is probably the hardest, or one of the hardest things to kind of come back from in a relationship when it's been broken. And when we look at trust, it has a lot of slow build up. We don't usually trust people immediately. We usually build trust over a period of time, and that will become more connected, more trusting as we experience them, as they connect to us, as we build an understanding, knowledge that we can know that what they're telling us and what they're doing is something they're always going to do. So when we build trust, we kind of like work with relationships in a much closer way once we trust people. So you wouldn't necessarily trust somebody that was just selling you something in a shop, for example. You would normally build that trust over a period of time. But if you'd gone into that shop 3 or 4 times and dealt with the same person, and they'd given you good advice and they'd supported you and you know, checked out what you wanted and how you wanted it, then you're going to build a bigger connection to that person. You probably hunt them out when you go into the shop, to be fair. And that will build a trust between you, because you can securely say that what they're telling you is true. So when we look at trust, and we look at trust in relationships, it breaks down with usually something that the other person hasn't told you about, a secret or a behavior that you're not aware of that's detrimental to your relationship with that person. So trust and breaking down of trust is hard to come back from. It's not an easy one. It can be repaired. It can come back. But it needs both parties to be able to change and adapt and become more open and honest with each other. So you can have affairs. A lot of people who come to me, couples, are working with an affair. One person in the relationship has connected and been with other people, not necessarily physically, emotionally, sometimes even via email. And that process of one person not being aware of what the other person is doing, the secret, if you like, that thing that you're not aware of, that then creates a process in the relationship. So if the other person finds out at some point that the person has been doing that behaviour and that affair, then the trust will be broken in the relationship. You're doing something that I did not know about, and you knew I would be upset by it if I found out. So you're keeping it from me. So if you're keeping that from me, what else are you keeping from me is a natural assumption to make, that there's more to know. So we can have, which might sound strange, but we can have an affair with anything that's in a secret process. So you can have an affair with drink. You can have an affair with drugs. You can have an affair with gambling. You can have a shopping. You can have an affair with anything that's a secret, which might sound a bit strange to look at it that way. But it's the secret that creates the trust issue. So when we're looking at those kind of processes with any relationship, rebuilding a trust is a lot harder if it's been a drip-drip effect of knowledge. So if somebody said, well, you know, why did you do that, and you said, okay, I did that because XYZ, or I don't know why I did that, and you tell them something, and then you don't tell them the whole story, you only tell them a bit of the story that they're asking about, then that drip drip effect of knowledge will basically make it harder to come back from. So if there's a secret, if there's something somebody doesn't know, then you need to be completely open and honest from day one. As soon as it's found out, better still, tell them before you do it. When people engage with those processes, it can be an addictive process. Certainly gambling, pornography, those kind of things, drinking, alcohol, drugs, those kind of things can be an addictive process. But any addiction, usually in my world, in my experience, comes from something that started it. Now, it could be that you grew up in a household where lots of people drank awful lot at the time. So your knowledge, experiential process, your kind of understanding of the world is done through drink. So you just keep on doing that. It's not necessarily addictive, it's just what you've learned to be the way that things work. It's your normal, if you like. That's slightly different, because until we come up against something that says, why do you do that? Why does everybody drink all day long, or whatever? Then until you come up with that different world, then pretty much you don't know there's another world. You don't know there's another normal. So then you do a comparison. So if, for example, somebody grew up in a household whereby, you know, the people didn't come into the house. The family were in the house and nobody was drawn in. You didn't have visitors. You didn't have friends over. Didn't do sleepovers, which is kind of things that God talk about nowadays with kids. Then you would, your normal would be the only person who come into this house is us, the family. If you then go into somebody else's house, say a friend's house, and they're looking after you for the day, then you might find a different process. You might find lots of people coming in all the time. Oh, you know, just thought I'd drop by, you know, do you want a cup of tea? Do you want a coffee? You know, do you want some food? So it might be a much more open process of engagement. So then once you've had both experiences, you might then think, which do I prefer? Do I prefer this closed shop process in my family, or do I prefer this open kind of whatever kind of process in my friend's family? Once you've got that two sides, you can then have a comparison. And then you can start thinking about, well, how do I want to be in my world? So when I grew up, I found that my first 6, 7, 8 years of life, pretty much it was only the family that was in our house. Nobody was asked over for tea. We didn't have birthday parties or any of those kind of things. And then I went to a friend's house, and just for the day, because my parents and my other siblings were out somewhere doing something. I think it was a wedding. And so I was looked after by my mate and his mum and dad and family. And I saw this, all this open process. And I quite liked it. I quite like people coming in. I quite like talking to other people. I quite like sharing food, all those kind of things, and that social interaction. So I had that experience. Then I went back to my family and said, well, you know, why can't we have people in? Because I've seen this difference. And my family went back to the traditional process that the family went and said, no, we can't do that. So then when I have a house, when I have a home, when I have my own space, I have lots of people in. So New Year was an open door process. Anybody want to come in from the close, from the people around us, can do. And we were sharing drink and food and stuff. And so I was able to have my world from that world. So until we see that difference and we see both sides of that process, we cannot do a comparison. Our world is just the way our world is. So when we're looking at trust, and we're looking at that breakdown of trust because something's being kept a secret, it's usually because we either don't believe the person that we're with will understand the secret, will be happy with the secret. We feel the secret will be criticized in some way, shape or form. And we'll probably have a negative aspect of telling them. So we don't tell them. We keep on doing the secret, whatever the secret is. Once we get into that and the person finds out about our secret, then that's when the trust breaks down in the relationship. Now, as I've said, with an affair, for example, somebody is connected with somebody outside of their primary relationship, and their primary relationship partner has identified that that's a no-go for us. You know, we're in this relationship, the two of us, and that's who's going to be in it. Because relationships are many and varied, and sometimes there's different boundaries and different rules. But if that was the case, then you've gone outside of our relationship. You're talking to this other person. You're sharing emotional content with this other person. You're sharing ideas, views. Some of our secrets you're giving to them. Then that process of trust breaks down. Generally speaking, because a relationship is about two people, interactive, reactive, then the relationship is usually broken down long before the secret comes out, long before you found out. The communication, as I said in the last podcast, will have broken down. And that breaking down of the relationship, the communication, will have made a process whereby this third party, this external aspect, is filled. The void that we've no longer got is filled by this third party. And that usually means that the relationship partner, both people, have unfortunately contributed to that. Now, that doesn't take away from the fact that one person has gone outside the relationship without talking to the partner. That choice decision is theirs. It's not exonerating them from that choice. It's not saying the choice was okay, but there's a reason the choice was made. And so in working with that secret, that disclosure, that finding out, we then have to, if both parties still want to, we have to try and build a brand new relationship and try to bring back that part that was lost, that void. Try and fill it with the relationship instead of an external third party. But in order to do that, both people in that relationship have to understand that they contributed to that process and want to obviously recreate a new relationship with each other. When we're talking about drink and drugs and gambling and all those kind of things, then obviously there's a much bigger process for some people, not everybody, but for some people, because that can have a detrimental effect on finances, it can have a detriment on health. There can be a whole range of differences that will come through that than it would be if it was an affair. Yeah, affair is not going to necessarily make you poorly. Affair is not necessarily going to destroy your world. It can do, obviously, depending on that other partner, that other relationship process. But building the trust means that both people have to take some responsibility of why that relationship breakdown, for that to be included. When we're doing work with a couple, or we're doing work with a family, or any kind of process, if it's an addictive process, it is different, because the addiction tends to create a much more awkward, not understandable process that the other partner, who isn't addicted, really finds it hard to understand. So that work is not what I do. I don't do the addiction work. It's not my speciality. It's not one of the things I kind of have speciality about. But we would naturally have somebody dealing with the addictive process, as well as myself or another counsellor dealing with the partner that's going through that, understanding that the addiction's there. So you get the person who is addicted working with the addiction, you've got their partner working with a counsellor, and then we work with them as a couple once the addiction has really been brought under control. When it's an affair, then it has different components, as I've said. So in that trust breakdown of the relationship, building that trust means that we have to put in place some process of connection to the couple. We have to bring some understanding of each person's responsibility and why the relationship wasn't working, which is a hard one to find and understand sometimes. And then we have to build a brand new relationship. But we can't build that brand new relationship, generally speaking, until we've done that process. So if we're looking at affairs, then the main thing, the person who was the one that was affected by the affair, not had the affair, and I tend not to use that from my counselling colleagues. I tend to use different terminology when we're talking about affairs. I say the person who abused the trust and the person who was abused by the trust. So I use those words because the affair word can be a bit emotionally charged. So the person who was affected by the abuse of trust, they really want to know one question. In lots of different ways they might ask the same question, but they usually want to know why. The why is important. The why is a part of the process of healing, because if we understand the why it happened, then we can kind of understand that we don't have to worry about anything unless the why appears in the future. So we can have an awareness process, but the why usually comes in lots of questioning. So I kind of work differently with that, and I'll go through the process with you now, which hopefully will help. So the person whose trust was abused has lots of questions, as I've said. If we allow those questions to be a verbal process, it tends to really cause issues and problems, because it becomes a interrogation. Because every time the person gets an answer of why, what happened, how it happened, whatever that is, that question, then there's always another question from the question, an answer process. So you find it's an interrogation. And the person who has to ask that question, if it comes into their head at 2 o'clock in the morning, they're going to wake you up and they're going to ask that question, because they can't get it out of their heads. They can't hold it. They can't just let it go. So it becomes really destructive in a relationship. So my way of working with it is I take it away from a verbal process and I put it into a written process. Now, two things do that, create that process. One is that the interrogation stops. The questions are put down on a written process, not a verbal process. So it helps the person who's asking the questions, because they then can write all their questions down. They don't have to naturally feel when they're asking the question verbally that I won't ask this question if you haven't done what you did. And it goes on to a whole different concept. So by writing the questions down, then that person gets their questions down on paper, And then that process means that they are in charge of it. And it's really important that the person whose trust was abused, then they are in charge, they're in control in my world. So they will write every question they have, and it don't matter how many they have, I tell them. But what I do say is, your caveat, your process, is that once you've written all the questions down that you have, you draw the line under it. There are no more questions. And you have to honour that. And that's not easy sometimes, but they have to honour that. The person who's written the questions then give them to the partner, and the partner writes the answer. Now, the reason why that works better is because we have time to write the answers. It's not something that we have to think on the spot. And what I say to that person that's writing the answers, I say, well, okay, if you don't know the answer, you don't write it. Don't appease. Don't write what you think they want to know. Write the truth. You have to be honest. Even if you've said something before that wasn't the truth, this is the point of truth. This is the point where you get everything out and make it all okay. So when that person has written all the answers that they can answer, then they would give them back to the other person. And then they go through those questions and answers and they scrub out everything they're happy with. Then what I do in the counselling room, I work through the remaining questions that haven't been answered or haven't been answered fully. I work it one at a time with the person who abused the trust while the other person is there listening. And we have a conversation. So for my colleagues, counsellors, therapists, it looks initially like a long drawn out process. It does. You can have lots and lots of questions that haven't been answered. But what it does is it then, when you're having a conversation with the person who abused the trust and you're going through the questions one at a time, the conversation will answer probably four or five different questions because you're having a conversation around the question. You're not actually just talking about the question. So that process means that it engages with an easier process for both parties. And then every time I've done a question with the person who abused the trust and an answer and a conversation, I'd go back to the original person that asked those questions and say, is that okay? Can we move on? Are you happy with that? And if they say they are, then I would move on through. If they say they aren't, then I would go back into it and the conversation and see what it is that we need to look at. That process gets rid of the reason for the disturbance, the trust breakdown. Then what we do, once we've done that, if both parties are happy, obviously, we'd build a brand new relationship. When we deal with trust, we deal with the very heart of our relationships. It's what everything is based on. It's the foundation, if you like. And that, when it is broken, is not easy. So when people try and get through these kind of situations with trust on their own as a couple, we tend to find it doesn't really work. It will either put a sticky plaster on it. If it's an addiction, they'll probably go back into the addictive work, whatever the addiction is, because they haven't dealt with it, whatever it is. And then at some point in the future, then the relationship will break down again. And that doesn't help anybody. Because you go through the process with a lot more time. There's not as much information that can be given because of memory, because of a whole range of reasons. So it's good to kind of work with it reasonably shortly after it's happened to do that. But that process will help you to engage with the person and to find the why. Now, if it's an addictive process that's the secret, such as gambling, drugs, drink, whatever, then that needs to be dealt with by the person who is addicted. So I would never work with the person that's addicted within the couple context initially, because until that addiction is under control, until they've got the head around it, they put in place some kind of coping strategies with that, then the addiction will still be there, I'm afraid. Because addiction isn't usually just a choice. Addiction is a process that there is choices in it, but the reason for the addiction is usually not from a choice. If you're interested in addiction, and if you're interested in the process of addiction, then the next podcast that I do, I've got an addiction expert in, Steve, and we'll be talking about that in a lot more detail than this. As I say, it's not my area of speciality. It is Steve's, though, and certainly with porn addiction, but it has elements of other addictions with it, because addictions are addictions, although obviously what the addiction's focused on might be different. It has some similarities in the way it works and what we're doing. So that will be the next one that we do, after this one, if you're interested. When you're dealing with trust and you're dealing with a breakdown of a relationship, it's really, really, really important that you keep the lines of communication open. You talk about it, you share it, you don't have the secret. Where trust is an issue, it's always about a secret. So try not to have secrets. Try not to get into behavioural patterns that would destroy the relationship. Talk about the relationship breakdown before you get into those kind of areas, because the relationship breakdown is the problem. What you do with that, how you fill that void, is your choice. That's a choice you've made, but it won't necessarily help the relationship. So yes, if you feel there's a void in your relationship, if you feel the relationship isn't working for whatever reason, communicate, talk, share, get to understand. Take time out to do that. That's a lot easier, a lot more simpler than the trust issue, because you can resolve most things if there's something wrong. You can resolve them. It's not easy. But the more that secret is kept, the more the behaviour of the secret is kept, the longer it's kept, the more destructive it is. Talking helps everything, whatever it might be, to be honest. Talking, sharing, understanding, communicating, checking out. Why are you upset? Why are you not happy? Why does this relationship not work for you? Then maybe you'll be able to solve it before you get to somebody like me. And then hopefully that solving it together will actually build a much stronger relationship, make it much more resilient and much more connected. Please, if you've found this interesting, if it's helped in any way, shape or form, please let me know, like it, share it. If you have any questions, please email me at info@iwtc.org.uk. But my connections are on the media processes I use. But don't sit on something for yourself without sharing. That's the thing that will create the problem. The not talking creates the problem. The talking actually makes it go away. Or at least gets to understand it, so we can put something in place that can make it easier. My name's Ian Wallace. I'm the Messed Up Counsellor. Thanks for listening or watching. Take care and enjoy your life, and have the life you want, not the one other people think you should have. Bye for now. How are we doing for time on